Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using a simple style and limited vocabulary. Today on the show, we have reports from Ashley Thompson and Mario Ritter. We close our program with an American story. And Pete Musto brings us Ask a Teacher. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Japan plans to remove South Korea from its list of top trading partners in a dispute that may be linked to historical tensions between the sides. The cabinet of Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe approved the plans on Friday. As a result, Japan would remove South Korea from a list of what are known as white countries with preferred trade relations. Such countries enjoy easier trade requirements than other nations. Starting on August 28th, however, Japanese companies must seek government permission to export to South Korea products that could have military uses. South Korean President Moon Jae-in called the move selfish and warned it could damage the world economy. Earlier, a South Korean presidential spokesperson promised a resolute answer to Japan's move. Last month, Japan restricted exports of a small number of important high-technology materials to South Korea. The materials are used to make semiconductors and parts for electronic products that are important to South Korea's export-fueled economy. Japan's decision to remove South Korea from the list is widely considered an action to answer rulings by South Korea's Supreme Court. In October, the court ordered some Japanese companies to pay Koreans who performed forced labor during World War II. The Japanese government says all such disputes were settled in a 1965 treaty between the two sides. Under the same agreement, the countries established diplomatic ties. The current trade issues, Japan says, are the result of national security concerns. The country pointed to improper incidents involving exports to South Korea. But some Japanese officials have appeared to link the decisions to the historical disputes. Japan has the world's third largest economy, while South Korea has the 11th largest. A trade war between the two could affect not only East Asia, but the world economy. It could threaten the international technology supply chain because South Korea produces about 70% of the world's computer memory chips. Tobias Harris is a Japan expert at the business advisory group Teneo. He says the effect of the new policy depends on how strongly Japan restricts exports. Harris said that when Japan ordered restrictions on trade with South Korea in July, officials suggested it would be difficult for Japanese companies to export the affected products. With its latest move, Harris said, the Japanese government appears to be putting Korea at the same level as Japan's other trading partners in Asia. Presumably, it won't be a total embargo so as to limit the direct impact on Japanese firms, he added. However, the dispute could hurt United States efforts to negotiate an end to North Korea's nuclear weapons program. The U.S. government has urged both sides to resolve their dispute. Matthew Goodman is a specialist on Asian economics at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He says it is understandable that Japan is frustrated with the issue of World War II forced labor and concerns over exports. But he warned, this issue is likely to set back the progress Japanese Prime Minister Abe has made over the past few years as an economic leader in the region and the world. The Japanese companies named in the South Korean court ruling have yet to pay the money to the forced labor victims. Some of the survivors who first brought the case have started legal action to seize some of the company's property to pay for a settlement. Japan says it cannot accept the rulings. But the South Korean government says it cannot overturn them because that would harm the independence of the country's court system. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
The American Space Agency, NASA, recently marked the 50th anniversary of the 1969 Apollo 11 moon landing. For some, the celebrations were a reminder that the program has not been to the moon since 1972. But NASA aims to change that soon. NASA's plans are taking shape in places like Huntsville, Alabama. That is where you will find NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center. Inside, engineers and other experts are working on building and testing a new Space Launch System, or SLS. Jody Singer is the center's director. She says the launch system is the key enabler to going to the moon. The Space Launch System is the only rocket capable of sending a fully equipped Orion, the astronauts, the supplies, and the systems to the moon in one launch and taking us deep into space, Singer said. The Orion is one of NASA's spacecraft. Mike Nichols is a lead testing engineer at the center. He has worked with NASA for over 20 years. On one recent day, he spoke with VOA about testing a new liquid hydrogen tank. Nichols said, "In order to prove that it's strong enough to survive launch, they build this structural test article, send it to us, we install it in the test end." NASA historian Brian Odom explains that the liquid hydrogen tank is just one piece of the larger SLS system. Another is a large metal container for liquid oxygen, he explains.
So the work you see in the background is for the liquid oxygen, the oxidizer for that SLS vehicle, to see if it's going to be able to withstand those pressures, those intense dynamics at launch. And so far, everything's looking good.
NASA's new moon program is called Artemis. The first mission is set for next year, without a crew. Artemis 2 plans to send astronauts around the moon in 2022. Artemis 3 is expected to touch down on the moon's south pole in 2024. If the testing works out, all of the missions will begin their trips to the moon on top of the new SLS system. Jody Singer says NASA has set its sights on newer, bigger, and more difficult goals than ever before.
So we're all working very hard to land the first woman and the next man on the moon by 2024 and take what we learned and do it and apply to the future missions, such as missions to Mars.
NASA is not the only program with big goals. Private companies such as Boeing and SpaceX are developing vehicles to take astronauts into Earth orbit and to the International Space Station. China's national space program has also announced a big goal. It aims to land a crew on the moon in the next 10 years. I'm Ashley Thompson.
This week, we answer a question from Muhammad in Iran. He writes, "What's the difference between come back and go back?" Thank you. Dear Muhammad, you are right. Come back and go back are confusing. English speakers use both expressions to talk about going places. And both expressions can be commands or strong requests. To identify the difference, the most important thing to consider is where you are and where the person you are talking to is. For example, let us say you are having a party at your house. Early in the night, your friends say they are leaving, but they promise to return. In that situation, you could ask your friends, "When will you come back?" In other words, you are asking them when they plan to return to where you are in that moment. They might answer, "We will come back at 10," or "We will come back as soon as we can." Now, here is another example. Let us say you are on vacation in a foreign country. You tell an employee at the hotel where you are staying that you want to see everything, but do not have much time. She asks, "When will you go back?" She wants to know when you plan to return to the place you came from, in this case, your home country. You might answer, "I have to go back on Tuesday," or "I have to go back in 3 days." But if you see her again on your way out to dinner, you might say, "I will come back before midnight." In that case, you will return to the place you both are in that moment, the hotel. all of those situations are friendly or neutral. But come back can also be a command when you want someone to return immediately to where you are. For example, if a person steals your property and runs away, you might shout, "Come back here!" Go back becomes a command when you want someone to return to the place they were before. For example, let us say one of the people at your party borrows your car to get more food. But later, when he returns to your house, he tells you that he left your car at the grocery store. So you tell him, "Go back and get it." And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Pete Musto.
Our story today is called Benito Sereno. It was written by Herman Melville. We will tell this story in three parts. Here is Shep O'Neill with part one of Benito Sereno.
Captain Benito Sereno hurried aboard his ship. It was ready to sail. A bright sun and a soft breeze promised good weather ahead. The ship's anchor was raised, and the San Dominique, old but still seaworthy, moved slowly out of the harbor of Valparaiso on the west coast of Chile. It was carrying valuable products and slaves up the Pacific coast to Callao, another Spanish colonial port near Lima, Peru. The slaves, both male and female, slept on deck. They were not chained because their owner, Don Alejandro, said they were peaceful. The San Dominique moved steadily forward under a clear sky. The weather showed no sign of change. Day after day, the soft breeze kept the ship on course toward Peru. Slave traffic between Spain's colonial ports in this year of 1799 had been steady, but there were few outbreaks of violence. What happened, therefore, on board the San Dominique could not have been expected. On the seventh day out, before daybreak, the slaves rose up in rebellion. They swept through the ship with handspikes and hatchets, moving with the fury of desperate men. The attack was a complete surprise. Few of the crew were awake. All hands, except the two officers on the watch, lay in a deep, untroubled sleep. The rebels sprang upon the two officers and left them half dead. Then, one by one, they killed 18 of the sleeping crew. They threw some overboard, alive. A few hid and escaped death. The rebels tied up 7 others, but left them alive to navigate the ship. As the day began to break, Captain Sereno came slowly, carefully, up the steps toward the chief rebel leader, Babo, and begged for mercy. He promised to follow Babbo's commands if he would only put an end to the killings. But this had no effect. Babbo had 3 men brought up on deck and tied. Then the 3 Spaniards were thrown overboard. Babbo did this to show his power and authority, that he was in command. Babbo, however, promised not to kill Captain Sereno. But everything he said carried a threat. He asked the captain if in these seas there were any Negro countries. None, Sereno answered. Then take us to Senegal or the neighboring island of St. Nicholas. Captain Sereno was shaken. That is impossible, he said. It would mean going around Cape Horn, and this ship is in no condition for such a voyage, and we do not have enough supplies or sails or water. Take us there anyway, Babo answered sharply, showing little interest in such details. If you refuse, we will kill every white man on board. Captain Sereno knew he had no choice. He told the rebel leader that the most serious problem in making such a long voyage was water. Babo said they should sail to the island of Santa Maria, near the southern end of Chile. He knew that no one lived on the island, but water and supplies could be found there. He forced Captain Sereno to keep away from any port. He threatened to kill him the moment he saw him start to move toward any city, town, or settlement on shore. Sereno had to agree to sail to the island of Santa Maria. He still hoped that he might meet along the way, or at the island itself, a ship that could help him. Perhaps, who knows, he might find a boat on the island and be able to escape to the nearby coast of Arauco. Hope was all he had left, and that was getting smaller each day. Captain Sereno steered south for Santa Maria. The voyage would take weeks. 8 days after the ship turned south, Babo told Captain Sereno that he was going to kill Don Alejandro, owner of the slaves on board. He said it had to be done. Otherwise, he and the other slaves could never be sure of their freedom. He refused to listen to the captain's appeals and ordered two men to pull Don Alejandro up from below and kill him on deck. It was done as ordered. Three other Spaniards were brought up and thrown overboard. Babo warned Sereno and the other Spaniards that each one of them would go the same way if any of them gave the smallest cause for suspicion. Sereno decided to do everything possible to save the lives of those remaining. He agreed to carry the rebels safely to Senegal if they promised peace and no further bloodshed. And he signed a document that gave the rebels ownership of the ship and its cargo. Later, as they sailed down the long coast of Chile, the wind suddenly dropped. The ship drifted into a deep calm. For days, it lay still in the water. The heat was fierce. The suffering intense. There was little water. That made matters worse. Some of those on board were driven mad. A few died. The pressure and tension made many violent, and they killed a Spanish officer. After a time, a breeze came up and set the ship free again, and it continued south. The voyage seemed endless. The ship sailed for weeks with little water on board. It moved through days of good weather and periods of bad weather. There were times when it sailed under heavy skies and times when the wind dropped and the ship lay becalmed in lifeless air. The crew seemed half dead. At last, one evening in the month of August, the San Dominique reached the lonely island of Santa Maria. It moved slowly toward one of the island's bays to drop anchor. Not far off lay an American ship, and the sight of the ship caught the rebels by surprise. The slaves became tense and fearful. They wanted to sail away quickly, but their leader, Babo, opposed such a move. Where could they go? Their water and food were low. He succeeded in bringing them under control and in quieting their fears. He told them they had nothing to fear, and they believed him. Then he ordered everyone to go to work, to clean the decks and put the ship in proper and good condition so that no visitor would suspect anything was wrong. Later, he spoke to Captain Sereno, warning him that he would kill him if he did not do as he was told. He explained in detail what Sereno was to do and say if any stranger came on board. He held a dagger in his hand, saying it would always be ready for any emergency. The American vessel was a large trade ship and seal hunter, commanded by Captain Amasa Delano. He had stopped at Santa Maria for water. On the American ship, shortly after sunrise, an officer woke Captain Delano and told him a strange sail was coming into the bay. The captain quickly got up, dressed, and went up on deck. Captain Delano raised his spyglass and looked closely at the strange ship coming slowly in. He was surprised that there was no flag. A ship usually showed its flag when entering a harbor where another ship lay at anchor. As the ship got closer, Captain Delano saw it was damaged. Many of its sails were ripped and torn. A mast was broken, and the deck was in disorder. Clearly, the ship was in trouble. The American captain decided to go to the strange vessel and offer help. He ordered his whaleboat put into the water and had his men bring up some supplies and put them in the boat. Then they set out toward the mystery ship. As they approached, Captain Delano was shocked at the poor condition of the ship. He wondered what could have happened, and what he would find.
That's our show for today. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with more stories from around the world. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.